TTT News Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, September 21st. I'm Alexis Kenyon, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Rosanna Longo-Better talks about the importance of including diverse voices in the media and, as the climate warms, the relationship between China and the U.S. grows colder. That story and more on the latest edition of This Week in Water.
And we'll play our weekly comment line and hear from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. The How on Earth team is taking a break this week. At 8:30, we'll hear an episode of the Rising Tide podcast. Blue Frontier's David Helvarg and the Inland Ocean Coalition's Vicky Nichols Goldstein will sit down with long-distance swimmer Matt Mosley. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines with Stacey Johnson.
Colorado's Office of Early Childhood and Governor Jared Polis announced yesterday $275 million from the American Rescue Plan has been allocated towards alleviating child care costs and an educator workforce. Funds will also go towards programs supporting the health and mental health of children, families, and child care providers. According to the governor's press release, the funding will result in $100 million kept in the pockets of families across the state, with families saving an average of about $450 per child in tuition reductions over the 9-month grant. The Denver Post reports infant child care in Colorado costs about 21% of a median family's income, and only about 6.2% of families in Colorado can afford infant child care. The Office of Early Childhood will provide more details about the new funding by holding a virtual town hall in English and Spanish on Thursday, September 23rd, starting at 5:30 p.m. Hundreds of high school students across Denver walked out of class yesterday morning and marched towards the downtown administrative offices of Denver Public Schools. They demanded the removal or resignation of school board member Tay Anderson. School board members censored Anderson Friday, as a recent third-party investigation determined Anderson flirted with a 16-year-old student before learning her age. He then intimidated witnesses through social media posts. The investigation also concluded Anderson made unwelcome sexual comments and advances toward female students involved in a student-led gun control group that Anderson co-founded. Anderson is reported to have admitted and apologized to those allegations. Investigators were not able to substantiate Anderson's sexual assault charges. According to the Colorado Sun, during yesterday's protest, a few students from each school met with school board members and voiced their concerns about Anderson. The YWCA of Boulder County and the NAACP Boulder County will be hosting a virtual information session this evening titled Critical Race Theory, What It Is and Isn't. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. and includes a panel of experts. Organizers invite students, parents, teachers, and community members to attend the webinar, and the moderated discussion will address the, quote, information needed to challenge the misrepresentation of critical race theory being used to create barriers for educators who are working toward more inclusive curriculum and equity programming in schools. Denver City Council members approved last evening just over $27 million to fund two new affordable housing complexes. According to the Denver Gazette, council members approved funding for the construction of an 82-unit complex on East Colfax called the Rose on Colfax. The site of the complex was formerly a strip club, which closed in 2017 after the city purchased the property in an effort to revive the area. The complex will be for tenants who make 70% or below the area's median income or just over $51,000 for one person. A certain number of apartments will be reserved or designated for residents who are at the lower and mid-ranges of income qualification. The complex will also have an early childhood education center on site, behavioral health services, financial literacy, job training, resume assistance, health education, and after-school and youth programming. The Denver Gazette reports that Denver City Council has also approved bond funding for the construction of an apartment complex that will house residents experiencing homelessness. The 49-unit complex called Rhonda's Place will be located on South Federal Boulevard and will be reserved for residents who make 30% or less of the area median income, or just over $22,000 for one person. Residents will pay no more than 30% of their adjusted gross income toward rent, with project vouchers covering the rest. The complex will have on-site addiction recovery services, case management, nurse practitioner visits, education programs, benefits assistance, psychiatric services, and transportation to grocery stores and physician visits. A safe, separated multi-use path for bikers and hikers may connect Boulder and Lyons in the not-too-distant future. The Denver Council of Regional Governments has awarded a $400,000 grant to Boulder County to carry out a feasibility study for the bikeway. The funding comes with a matching requirement, and the advocacy group, Cyclists for Community Group, is in conversations with Boulder County officials to financially contribute to the match. According to Cyclists for Community, the grant award came after 2 years of discussion with county officials to create a safe route between Lyons and Boulder. Boulder City Council is set to hold a vote tonight on the CU South Annexation Agreement that will guide flood control mitigation and the development of the 300-acre property owned by the University of Colorado Boulder. According to the Daily Camera, if the City Council decides to annex the property, the flood city itself. The Daily Camera reports the annexation agreement includes a revision that allows the city to disconnect the site from within its limits if any of the agencies do not authorize necessary permits. The City Council meeting is set to begin at 6 p.m. tonight. Today's weather for the northern metro front range includes sunny skies with a high in the upper 60s. Tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the 40s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 45 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. News Voices Colorado, a group that's working to improve representation for people of color in the news media, will host a community conversation this evening on the heels of publishing a new report. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Diamond Hardiman, the Colorado manager of News Voices, and a panelist today at today's event called The Time is Right Now.
Diamond Hardiman, it is a pleasure to have you, and especially because I love the title. The title is The Time is Now. Why is it that the time is now?
That title actually came from the title of our report, which came from one of our Black Voices working group members, Gloria Neal. She said, the time is right now. We've been in quite a past 2 years where we're talking about uprisings. We're talking about the importance of Black lives and Black safety. And so the time is right now. We can't wait. These recommendations, the critical information needs of Black communities, the stories of joy and of history, we need them right now. There's no more waiting. We need to get to work today.
I'm speaking with Diamond Hardiman. She is manager for News Voices Colorado, and she's part of the group of panelists who are going to be talking this afternoon. Tell us about the other panelists that will be joining you in this conversation.
So we have some of our working group members that will be joining us on the panel. We have Amy Brown, who used to work with Open Media Foundation. And what she did there was really work on their diverse hiring and retention work. So they have career engines that help hire diverse candidates. They have mechanisms that they use to track diversity in media ecosystems. And then we have Tia Trent. She works with Project Voice. So she's an organizer and community activist, and she works with youth. And she really brought a lot of that perspective to that report. How can we make this work intergenerational? And then we finally have Gloria Neal. And Gloria Neal is many things, including a former journalist. So she can really talk about diversity in newsrooms and what it's going to take to not just increase the number of Black journalists and Black stories, but what kind of infrastructure, what kind of support that they'll need so that they feel safe and that they can thrive in these newsrooms. And then it'll be moderated by the wonderful Tina Griego so that we can really dig deep into a lot of these topics.
Why is it important to have the presence of more people of color in media today more than ever?
It's critical to have more voices of color and specifically Black voices in media today because the way that we share stories, the ecosystems that we have, it's critical for that to be a part of this media ecosystem that we're talking about. When we're talking about how do you get access to housing, critical things around COVID, things around food, that's important for Black communities and Black Coloradans, and they deserve to be included in the chains of information that are shared out in ways that reflect what they see and need from their communities. But even more than that, it's also about narratives. Historically, people of color and Black communities have been left out of narratives about what communities are, what America is. And so the time is right now to rethink and redo and recreate and rebuild the ways that we've been able to operate that leaves people of color and Black voices on the margins instead of in the center, highlighted, bringing new ideas and new ways of sharing information and stories into this media space.
During this panel discussion, you will also be talking about the newly released Black Voices Report. Why is this important?
Yeah, this is so exciting, and I really want everyone and anyone that can join to really listen in on how we talk about and summarize this report. It's very different than any other report that we're talking about, and it's almost a misnomer that we named it a report, because what it really is a call to action. In it, we have five large recommendations, but under each recommendation, we have strategies and tactics for newsrooms to take, for funders to take, and for communities to take so that we can all work together to strengthen the information and stories that we're sharing and the ways that they center Black communities, and to also think about how we're shifting power and resources. So because we have these tactics and strategies lined out, there's so many actions for communities to take today. They can leave the conversation tomorrow and be ready to do something the next morning with what's in this call to action and report.
I have been speaking with Diamond Hardiman, manager for New Voices Colorado. We have been talking about an event happening this afternoon, and it's called The Time Is Now. And it is a moment to listen from the participants in how to really bring together these five recommendations that you have been explaining to me right now to implement them and to explore how Colorado can follow the lead of Black communities to transform news media. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosanna. I'm always happy to talk with you and KGNU, and we're really excited for this report and to share it with the world because it's going to take everybody in community, and so I'm so excited to be able to talk with you today.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Has the Paris Climate Agreement been submarined? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
New research gives hope that if there are rapid cuts to greenhouse gas emissions, then the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement could be reached.
But a new report from the UN warns that there's a large gap between what world leaders need to do and what they're actually doing. Countries must decrease emissions by at least 25% in about 8 years to avoid the worst impacts of global warming.
Getting there might have become more difficult because of geopolitics. Last week, the US and the UK announced they will supply Australia with nuclear submarines, And while China was not mentioned in the deal, the subs are a response to its rising power.
The U.S. and China are the world's biggest carbon emitters. Earlier this month, talks between the two about making deeper cuts to greenhouse gas emissions were unsuccessful, with Chinese leaders saying climate goals could not be separated from politics.
Experts fear the submarine announcement could further dash hopes of any climate deal with China, as the next UN talks on global warming are set to begin in about 6 weeks.
Smoke from wildfires can have catastrophic effects on local ecosystems, and now a new study led by Duke University shows it can also cause changes in ocean biology thousands of miles away.
About 2 years ago, a giant algal bloom, 2,000 miles wide, grew between New Zealand and the Southern Ocean that surrounds Antarctica. Blooms of algae, also called phytoplankton, are usually attributed to runoff from farmland, which is full of nutrients like nitrogen that the tiny organisms need.
But of course, there are no farms near the Southern Ocean, and the researchers found that it was smoke from wildfires in Australia 2 years ago, now called Black Summer, that traveled across the planet and fertilized vast communities of phytoplankton that could be seen from satellites.
The smoke contained iron and phosphorus, some of which comes from the burning forests and some from the dust that the fires push up into the stratosphere.
While this study did not look at the effects of the algal bloom in the Southern Ocean, other research has shown that smoke from a fire in Indonesia caused a red tide that killed an entire reef off its coast.
29 people died in Louisiana when Hurricane Ida struck the Gulf Coast over 3 weeks ago. Half of those deaths were from heat exhaustion or carbon monoxide poisoning from generators.
While many were desperate for electricity, New Orleans resident Devin DeWolf had power to spare. His house has 24 solar panels and 2 storage batteries, so he turned his porch into a hub for charging electronic devices, distributing ice, and powering his elderly neighbor's oxygen machine, refrigerator, and freezer.
Louisiana solar companies say most of their customers with storage fared well after Ida. While they couldn't store electricity, customers without batteries saw little damage to their panels, which are rated to withstand winds up to 140 miles per hour.
Solar panels can be expensive, so after the storm, DeWolf was inspired to partner with other nonprofits to start the Stay Lit initiative. It will turn neighborhood restaurants into community power hubs during disasters to support low-income residents who can't afford to evacuate or buy a generator.
The program aims not only to feed people, but also keep food from rotting, because waste in landfills is a source of methane, a potent greenhouse gas fueling intense climate disasters like Hurricane Ida.
And finally, we've heard a lot about how cows' burps are releasing methane into the atmosphere, but cow waste is also a climate issue.
That's because their urine contains nitrogen, and when mixed with their poop, it creates ammonia, which can transform into nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide.
Scientists from Germany and New Zealand wanted to see if they could contain the sizable amount of urine cows produce, and they did what many pet owners do. They trained them where to go.
It didn't involve a litter box, a potty chair, or a rolled-up newspaper, but they did use some of the same techniques a parent might to coax a toddler. They offered rewards.
The scientists encouraged cows on their research farm to pee in a special pen, a moo loo, where their urine could be collected and treated. When the animals used their cow commode, they got a molasses treat.
If the bovines peed outside, the researchers played unpleasant sounds. However, the animals didn't care. And ultimately, a squirt of water did the trick.
The calves took about 15 days to potty train, a bit faster than most children. The next step is to apply the method to larger herds and convince farmers it's worth having their cows skip to the loo.
But please don't skip This Week in Water. We'll be back next week. See you then.
Tonight on Hemispheres, the International Press Roundtable. This evening, the Roundtable team we'll review the news from around the world, not often heard in the corporate mainstream media. That's the International Press Roundtable, tonight on Hemispheres at 6.
KGNU presents Destination Freedom Black Radio Days live on KGNU Tuesday, September 21st at 7 p.m. The 2021 season of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days will examine the issues facing communities of color, beginning with The Cleaning Ladies and Bound by Blood. The Cleaning Ladies takes place in Manhattan on February 21st, 1965, in the Audubon Ballroom, the day of Malcolm X's assassination. Bound by Blood takes us to the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, the night of Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. That's a live broadcast of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days, live on KGNU, Tuesday, September 21st, from 7 to 8 p.m. More information at kgnu.org or nocredits.com.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Now we check in with KGNU's comment line. News director Shannon Young has been asking listeners to weigh in on the afternoon syndicated programming, specifically swapping out Tom Hartman's talk show for PRX's The World. We've received a good amount of feedback, though some callers asked us not to broadcast their messages. Here's the feedback from those who left on-record voicemails.
Yes, please don't mess with BBC or Tim Hartman. Thanks, bye.
You were asking about the comment on the programs in the afternoon, which one should go, which one should stay. The one that I really enjoy a lot is Janine Jackson, called Counterspin. I really enjoy that show, and I'd like to hear that a lot more. That's pretty cool. And also, Hemispheres is another one that I enjoy quite a bit. I think it's really cool. Okay, that's it. I hope you're having a great day. Bye.
Hi. You've been asking for comments on the afternoon news programs. I think they're all excellent. I listen to all of them, some more than others. I would say Ralph Nader is the best. He also has the best explanation of why we have direct democracy. He says, nobody's smarter than everybody, but Project Censored is great, Richard Wolf. If there's a weak one, it would be Peace Talks Radio, but I do listen to them all. Thanks.
I don't listen to the Hartman Show in the afternoons because I find that it's sort of like a talk radio show and really kind of coarse to me and certainly doesn't have much nuance regarding issues and ideas. That's my sense. I do want to speak in favor of maintaining the BBC if that's a question, because I think it's one of the most important things that KGNU does. Having the BBC, which is an international news organization at the same level of the New York Times, the Washington Post, opens up the world to us in ways that we wouldn't see or feel otherwise. That is, if you've traveled or lived abroad, then you know that American media, or really all media, creates a kind of umbrella over the culture and shuts out the light and understanding about other countries and cultures and what's going on. In other words, we need to know what's going on in Africa and Belarus. And we have such an international society. We have people from all over the world that we live with. And it's important that we all share the news and information about the whole world. So I'm for the BBC. Thank you.
You'd like to say about our syndicated afternoon programming, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. And that's all we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and Evan Perkins. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. How on Earth is on break this week, but stay tuned for the Rising Tide podcast, co-hosted by Vicki Nichols-Goldstein of the Inland Ocean Coalition, which is hosting its annual Masquerade Mermaid Ball this weekend at the Boulder Reservoir. That's coming up just after